You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles Hunting Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and I can't believe that 2024 marks 10 years of podcasting. Over the last decade, I have had the pleasure of talking with hundreds upon hundreds of passionate outdoors men and women who share the same excitement for hunting as I do. Whether you hunt public lands or private property, shoot traditional archery equipment or high-powered rifles, we all have one thing in common. And that's our love for the great outdoors. This year, I plan on continuing that tradition and bringing educational and entertaining content to your ears. Thank you for your continued support, and I hope you all have the best seasons of your life. Good vibes in, good vibes out. All right, here we go again, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson. And today we have a very unique and different, outside of the norm, episode here. We're going to be talking with Matt Light. Now, Matt Light, probably, if you follow NFL football and you're a New England Patriots fan, you might know who Matt Light is. He played in the NFL for 11 years as an offensive lineman for the New England Patriots. He is a Hall of Famer. He is a multi Super Bowl winning tackle. He's one of the GOATs, right, in his position. And so the cool thing about what he does and why he's on the podcast is because he is also an avid outdoorsman. And today's conversation, we have it kicks off by how he was introduced. You know, he came from an outdoors family. There's a connection to Fred Bear, which is really cool. And also, outside of his football career, he started the term that we discuss is philanthropy. And he started with his family an outdoor, I guess you would call it a foundation, an outdoor foundation, the Light Foundation, which introduces kids to the outdoors through hunting, fishing, and other outdoor activities. They have leadership programs. It's just a really, really cool thing what Matt is doing, basically giving back. And so that's what today's topic of conversation is all about. Before we get into today's episode, though, we do have to run through a couple paying partners here on the Nine Finger Chronicles, and that is Tethered. If you're looking for a saddle hunting accessories, go check out Tethered. They have a turkey hunting vest as well. As we come into the time of year where everybody's getting ready for turkeys, go check out Tethered's turkey vest, and you can do that at tetherednation.com. WaspArchery.com, again, my opinion, some of the best designed, best built, best material broadheads on the market. They have expandables, and they have fixed blade options for you to choose from. So do me a big favor, go to WaspArchery.com, and if you do decide to purchase, enter the discount code NFC20, and we'll go from there. Vortex Optics. Vortex, again, it's turkey hunting season, and so you definitely need to go check out some of their red dots that you can put on your turkey shotgun. I am actually going to pick one up here within the next couple weeks, get it attached to the old turkey slaying Mossberg 20 gauge that I have, and hopefully that might make it easier for my daughter to find a target, and it's not just open sights. So I'm hoping to take advantage of that. You can go to eurooptic.com and you can enter the discount code, what is it, 9, the number 9 followed by the word finger and then 10. So 9 finger 10, and that's going to get you 10% off at all of Vortex products at eurooptic.com. And then code blue sense, dude, if you haven't messed around with mock scrapes, this is the year that you need to try that, and you can go out and you can do it right now. Start hanging those things up right now, get deer comfortable with them, get deer used to them, and so they've had multiple months in the woods coming to investigate this preorbital gel. So go to codebluesense.com. They also have real and synthetic deer urines. They have scent elimination products, laundry detergents, things like that. Codebluesense.com. I have a discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Go take advantage of that. The Woodman's Pal. I'm getting ready. I would say within, my goal is to do it before all of the vegetation comes back on the trees. So if basically to adjust some tree stands, to move some trail cameras, that's the goal anyway. If I don't make it, I still have the Woodman's Pal that can hack vines, hack sticks, hack branches, clear shooting lanes. Also, what I use it the most for is to kind of clear paths for my trail cameras. So every year something grows up over top of them or grows up in the way. Hack that little area out, keep them clear of obstruction. And so that's how I use my Woodman's Pal. Go to woodmanspal.com, made in America company. They've been around since the 40s. And then they also have other selections on their website of leather goods. And I believe they have a holster, not only for the machete, but for, I believe it's for firearms too. So go check that out. Then we have Huntworth. All right. So it's turkey season, right? If you don't have any gear for turkey season, now's the time to get it. Go to huntworthgear.com. Check out all of the products that they offer. In my opinion, I'm going to say they're up there with the elite brands, right? And they have one of the best layering systems of all of the hunting gear that is on the market. So go check out huntworthgear.com. And then by the way, Huntworth, they're getting ready to put out a turkey season sale. So keep an eye out for that. I'm not sure when it starts, but I just got an email from them. Let me pull that up real quick. I don't want to steer you guys wrong on this. Let's see here. Okay. I'm sorry I'm wasting your time here. All right. Let's see. It's going on now to March 24th, okay? So go to huntworthgear.com and take a look at all of the products that they offer, and it looks like it's 20% off site-wide. 20% off site-wide. There's no discount code. Just go take a look at all of the clothes that they offer. Last but not least, speaking of clothing, you got to go check out my company, and that is fullsneakgear.com. Just started it up a couple months ago. It's doing great so far. I have a good selection of outdoor themed t-shirts, mostly whitetail at this point, but I am working on a turkey t-shirt. You can go check out the Licking Branch tee. You can go check out the Full Sneak Slayer tee, and then all the other logo tees that I have as well. So including a crew neck, stocking caps, and the official Nine Finger Chronicles trucker hat. FullSneakGear.com. Go check it out. Please go check it out and buy something. And then that allows me to hunt more. So if I make money, that money doesn't necessarily go to my hunting. It actually goes to my wife. and when I take her out for dinners and I, you know, have a little special day with her, that's what the money that I make actually goes for. And in return, I get to hunt more. And I think all of you guys understand that. So excellent episode today. Really appreciate you guys tuning in. Make sure you listen in this episode for the turkey touchdown and what that's all about through the Light Foundation and how you guys can win a free turkey hunt to Florida. It's a big deal. So go check that out and enjoy today's podcast, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll see you on the back end. 3, 2, 1. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today's guest is Mr. Matt Light. Matt, how are we doing, man?
So far, so good, my friend. It's a sunny day here in New England, and I'm able to get a little work done finally after all the rain.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, you send some of that rain to Iowa. We are in desperate need of it as far as soil is concerned. I mean, we've been drought. I mean, the western part of the Midwest has been in a severe drought now for several years, I feel like. And we will take as much rain as you guys can give us.
Listen, I think, you know, I've talked to a number of people. Actually, I had run into Mark Drury last year at the NWTF convention, and he shared a study with me. And in that study, they basically, it was a 1,000-year study of these tree rings, right? Mm-hmm. So they had these rings that they would look at, and when they looked at them, they could, you know, come up with quite a bit of information from these tree rings. And in a lot of cases, it tells the story of not just the rainfall, but really the weather and the climate and the different things that tree experienced over that 1,000-year period, right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, they were able to extrapolate a lot of information from that. And the thing that I took from all of it, because I'm not smart enough to read this study, it's like many pages with right. multi-syllable words, and, you know, but the thing that I took from it is that, you know, we're probably going to be in a drought type situation for quite some time. And whether that's 3 to 5 more years, 7 years, I mean, you know, I think time will tell.
Yeah.
But it's definitely going to have an impact on, you know, what we experience as outdoorsmen, as hunters.
Right.
You know, if you're putting, you know, crops in the ground, you know, look, where I'm at in West Central Ohio, I can tell you that we're not getting the kind of rainfall that we like either. Now, we don't irrigate. We don't have pivots. We don't do any of that stuff for the most part.
Right.
But it's probably something that you're going to start seeing more and more. And at the same time, obviously, you know, we've kind of bastardized our water table in many different scenarios based on fracking and industry and, you know, different, you know, aspects. And even if you really think about it, what we've done with the tiling of our fields, right? We're able to get water out of our fields instantaneously, and that's great for growing crops, but I'm not necessarily sure that's good for the local water table.
Well, that and the fact that moisture is removed from the field so fast that you have to have consistent rain. And you're here in Iowa, one of the things that we always struggle with is farming right up to the fence line, right? There's no erosion runoff in a lot of instances. And so it's important to take, you know, make sure you have buffer strips and CRP in there to fight off erosion and help with wetlands and things like that. And so, like you said, when that water runs off, floods everything, and there's no control of it, which is unfortunate. So,
yeah, you know, I think in a lot of ways, you look at some of the studies and the information that's come out, and you know, it's led to a lot of advancements in certain right. areas, right? And
right.
so, you know, I'm not a technology hater or an information guy that, you know, just to have information. I think we do have to be a little bit more, maybe pump the brakes a little bit and look at the much bigger picture. Yes, yeah. we'd all like to get, you know, 20, 30 bushel more per acre, right? Yes,
right.
we'd like to, you know, maximize the return, but there's always a cost to
exactly.
doing business. And,
yeah.
you know, I think, you know, look, I love the fact that we have programs where we can get paid to put waterways in and buffer strips and, you know, whether it's wetlands or CRP or tree plantings, that's great.
Yeah.
But I think how we do that's important. I can tell you this much. I spent quite a bit of time in England with a friend of mine, and we hunt a lot in England. And if you want to see the management of land from a conservation standpoint, from a wildlife standpoint, done really, really well, you have to look at England. They've been doing it for thousands of years.
Yeah.
And so I don't know how much we share information, right? You look at some of the technology, the way that they farm versus how we farm, how they spray their fields with drones versus, you know, it's not even legal to do that in some areas here,
yeah.
You know, so anyway, don't want to get off on a tangent, but man, there's a lot to be learned. And that's part of the fun, I think, of being an outdoorsman is that, you know, it's like what they say about the game of golf, right? You can never master it. Well, you know, I think it's more aptly put in our realm.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay. So, there's a lot to talk about today. All right. You know, you are obviously, if you're on this podcast, you're an outdoorsman in some way, shape or form. Right. But, and I have a lot of outdoorsmen that come on this podcast. You have a little bit of a unique story that you played in the NFL, that you are a Super Bowl champion, that you're a philanthropist, that you have a foundation dedicated to getting kids in the outdoors. And really, I want to unpack all that. And I want to talk to you about how you grew up and things like that. And so I'm just going to get right into it. And I'm just going to ask you, did you grow up in the outdoors, in a hunting, fishing, camping type of family?
You know, I think it starts for me with my father and my uncles, right? My father was the luckiest dude ever. He grew up, and my grandfather, his father, was pretty good friends with a guy named Fred Bear. And,
oh boy.
You know, I got to listen to these stories, and I got to see and shoot these bows that Fred would pass down to either my dad or one of my uncles or my grandfather, and hear the stories of stopping, you know, up and on their way to one of our hunting camps up in Michigan, they'd stop over and see Fred, and Fred would give my grandfather, you know, some flus or some different arrows or some bow. And, you know, hey, Jim, let me know what you think about that. And I also grew up in a family that had three generations of our family writing the Lights Outdoors column in the local Daily Advocate paper. So, you know, my uncle, my dad's oldest brother, was writing that column. He took over for my grandfather, who took over for my great-grandfather. And, you know, as a kid growing up, to see your name in print, mm-hmm. and to have your uncle tell about how, you know, I outfished him, which I'm sure he allowed to happen. But, you know, it was a very special, you know, relationship. For not just how I looked at the outdoors, but really the people that came before me. You know, my great grandfather started an organization or started to build an area that used to be owned by American Aggregate, and he turned it into 26 lakes, and they put cottages there. So conservation, the outdoors in general, hunting, I mean, that was just a way of life, you know, and I didn't shoot anything with a gun unless it was small game. I mean, everything we did, we were archers at the core. Now, my father, grandfather, they were all great gunsmiths. My dad can cut a stave off an Osage tree and using only stone tools make you any bow you could possibly imagine. Reflex, deflex, Japanese sumi bow, you know, long bow, tradition, anything you could imagine. He can do it. He can nap any point on earth. He can make, you know, Port Orford cedar, Sitka spruce shafts. I mean, he's just a wealth of knowledge, man. I didn't get any of that. I just got really good looks, you know, so.
Love it.
But yes, just from my background, man, the outdoors has always been a way of life. And I must say too, nobody in my family gives a damn about how many inches.
Exactly.
You know, And I think there's nothing wrong with it because there's no way that I would ever deny how incredible it is to harvest a big, old, mature buck.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But I would lead with the big, old, mature part over the antlers. The antlers speak for themselves, man. I mean, you know, women like diamonds and men love antlers. I mean, there's just – no way to dispute it. And but I think the reason why is, at least for us, it's always the camaraderie, the campfire, the butchering, the putting in food plots, and how you amend soil, the setting tree stands. My God, it's almost to, at this point in my life, everything outside of the actual harvesting of an animal that I love the most.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of people who go through that progress in life when it comes to the outdoors, right? A lot of it depends on the culture. I had a really good conversation recently about the culture of hunting and how it's different. You know, it's different in Michigan than it is in Iowa, than it is in Texas, than it is in Florida, or whatever the case may be. And watching how people grow from, you know, being, I don't want to say selfish, but I want to go out and I want to bag, you know, my limited ducks, or I want to bag my deer. And then how that slowly transitions into, let me help others, then to things like, let me help the environment and let me create the ecosystem in which these animals live. And so it's always cool to hear, you know, different people's stories. But I do have to ask you a question. You just named, you and your family had this connection to what some would say is the GOAT, or the biggest icon in North American hunting, Fred Bear. And so I'm just kind of curious, like, what was that connection, or what was that connection to him like when you were young? Or I don't know if when he passed away, or if you had the opportunity to meet him or anything like that.
You know, unfortunately, I didn't get an opportunity. Mm-hmm. I can tell you this much, though. First, you know, my grandfather, my great grandfather, and definitely my father, you know, they have world-class minds. I mean, the way that they think, the way that they are able to engineer and create, and from an artistic point of view, I mean, it runs so congruent with what Fred was. I mean, Fred was such an innovator. He brought so much passion. He had such a real understanding of the why of what he did, and how important that was to hold on to. That you don't become the GOAT without being extremely dynamic in almost everything that you do. And so to put that in my own kind of upbringing, you know, my dad is a dynamic person, truly, truly unique in many, many facets. And I got to hear the story of my grandfather and my great grandfather and all this family history. And one of the things that I really enjoyed was when I got to read the letter that Fred wrote to kind of just show his appreciation for his relationship with my grandfather. And, you know, we have that saved, and, you know, that's something that's near and dear to our family, you know, in terms of, you know, just who it was and the sentiment and everything else. I mean, it just reminds you of how special, you know, that guy was, to take the time out of his day to send a letter to one of probably, I don't know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people that he's met along the way. And, you know, look, my grandfather, great, they were in the Outdoor Writers Association, you know, back in the day. I think for, in some ways, you know, the men and women that spent a lot of time in the outdoors were far more in tune with their communities than we are today.
Absolutely.
Because there is a sense of, you know, what about me, or this is mine, or coveting a spot or whatever. And I don't know, man, I've never seen it that way. But I was coached from an early, you know, period in my life to not look at it like that.
Yeah. I mean, and just to get a letter from Fred Bear, it's like the ultimate sign of respect. Like you said, if someone's going to take time out of their day to appreciate you, you know, and your friendship, dude, that's like a frameable moment that you hang in your house and you just look at it all the time.
Yeah, it's pretty special, man. Yeah. And look, I've been able to meet so many incredible people that are in the industry, you know, that have, you know, really helped shape the last, you know, 2, 3, 4 decades. Mm-hmm. Been able to hunt with some incredible people, been able to, you know, visit some incredible places. And there are still a lot of very, very accomplished outdoorsmen out there. But look, growing up too, man, I mean, the only vacations we took were basically to go to pre-1800 encampments, man. They called them rendezvous. We'd go and set up a lean-to and a teepee, run around in buckskins and loincloths and, you know, and, oh, yeah, man, listen, we'd compete in hawk and knife throwing, traditional archery shoots, you know, turkey shoots with muzzleloaders. And, I mean, if it was made after 1800, you didn't have it in your camp. And I don't know, it was awesome, man. I'd be sewing rabbit fur blankets and, you know, taking guys' money off a trade blanket on some hawk and knife competition. I mean, it was wild, man. Guys sitting around playing gut buckets and, you know, fiddles and dulcimers and around a campfire with jugs of whiskey. I mean, dude, it was good living.
It sounds like you were born way too late.
You know, I always feel that way. And then when I go to the doctor or I think about what their dental plan was like back then, I'm like, yeah, I'm good.
That's funny. Oh, man. Okay, so as you were growing up, it sounds like you kind of dabbled in a little bit of everything. Did you have a favorite outdoor activity? Maybe that's hunting, maybe that's camping or going to these rendezvous. Did you have a favorite?
Yeah, you know, I think for me, I think the easy thing for a lot of kids is you get stuck in fishing for a while. And I used to love fishing all the creeks and the streams. I grew up just west of Tecumseh Point, and Tecumseh Point is where the signing of the Greenville Treaty took place, and that was a big deal. That kind of freed up the entire, you know, Midwest for probably a day from a whole bunch of, you know, craziness at the time. But, you know, it was basically in the late 1700s they get this signing of the Greenville Treaty. The Fort Greenville was the largest fort, you know, east of the Mississippi at the time. And there was a lot of turmoil. And the reason that there was such activity there was because it was such a fertile hunting ground. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about some of the best soil, you know, it's some of the most diverse hardwoods on planet Earth are all in that area. And so I got to fish all these incredible, you know, the Greenville Creek, the Mud Creek, the Miami, like all these neat bodies of water. So I love fishing. And I also love small game, right? I mean, if we were running coon dogs or, you know, tree and squirrels with mountain curs or, you know, shooting bunnies, I mean, the small game and all that, it wasn't until high school and college that I really got obsessed with deer.
Yeah.
As we all get infected and many other game. But it really came down to how well did it hit the table and how palatable is it? And how many can I get to put in my belly? So,
yeah. So this is interesting because I had some friends back in the day who they did not go out for football in school because they loved hunting more than they loved football. Okay. And so it sounds to me like, I mean, you come from a family that is outdoors, 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 outdoors. Then you have to participate in it, or I don't know, you choose to participate in an activity that takes place every day after school, and it pulls you out of the woods to go participate in football. What was that balancing act like for you that early on?
Yeah, you know, because I loved it so much, because I didn't go to jail when I hit people, you know, it was like, you know, it was football, it's really kind of incredible because I had never seen a football game in my life until I went to college. I mean, the first college game I saw, I played in. Mm-hmm. The first NFL game I ever saw in my life, I played in. I knew nothing about the game outside of my own little town, our division, the people I played against. It wasn't until really my junior year of high school that I knew that they even pay for your college.
Really?
And I thought that was really good time because my old man was like, hey, look, nobody paid for mine. I'm not paying for yours. So you may want to figure that one out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, I think as it relates to hunting, at the high school level, you know, you're not, it doesn't take up your entire season, right? But then from then on out, it's just a dogfight to find any time in the fall to do anything.
Yeah.
And especially when you get to the league, you know, and we were fortunate. We made deep runs all the way into February a lot of times. And, man, I'd get out maybe 2-3 times a season, but it was really like cheating. You know, I'm relying on somebody else's intel. I haven't done the work. I didn't set stands. I didn't, you know, put in my food plots. I didn't really feel like I earned the right to be out there, but I still loved it. You know, it's therapy for all of us that know what real therapy looks like. And, you know, it was always fun, but I never had a chance. So I became obsessed with turkey hunting, which was not wasn't something that we could pursue growing up in Ohio. I mean, they didn't exist. Mm-hmm. You know, when I left there in 1996, wasn't a turkey in our county to unless they were in a barn, and then there was like 60,000 of them. But outside of that, you know, I didn't start turkey hunting until 2002 when I got to New England, and it was my first off season because there's quite a few out here.
Yeah, for sure. Out of curiosity, what college did you go to?
I went to Purdue, West Lafayette, Indiana. So, you know, upper third, you know, kind of west side there. And, man, I'll tell you, great hunting in that area as well.
Yeah. Man, that's that Big Ten country, right? Like, I'm just an hour – no, excuse me. I'm like 25 minutes from Iowa City. And so, obviously, I grew up an Iowa Hawkeye fan. And I'll have to go back, and now that I know your timeline here, how did you do against the University of Iowa?
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Man, I don't want to feed you bad information. I think we did pretty well. Yeah. I mean, I know this – when I got there, we were under Coach Coletto.
Yep.
And he left after my rookie year. And then the next 3 years that I played were under Coach Tiller.
Okay.
And in that span, we went to the Alamo Bowl twice. And then Alamo Bowl twice over the next 4.5 years. Alamo Bowl twice, the Outback Bowl, and then the Rose Bowl when we won the Big Ten. So we had really an incredible stretch. You know, Drew Brees, I was his left tackle.
Wow.
You know, we kind of introduced a different style of play within the Big Ten. And it was a really neat time to be a Boilermaker, man. We were winning a lot of games. You know, Drew was lighting up the scoreboard, you know, with his style and the way he did things. And, man, it was fun.
Yeah. I'm going to get away from football here in a second, but I always, you know, running backs, they get all the glory, right? Or receivers or people who touch the ball carriers. What kind of kudos do offensive linemen get from anywhere? Do they get it from anywhere? Or, I mean, are you guys respected? Or, like, I'm always curious because nobody talks about offensive linemen unless there's a major trade or something like that. What's it like to be in it?
Well, actually, maybe better stated, nobody talks about an offensive lineman unless they screw up.
There you go.
And So quite honestly, you really don't want to hear yourself, you know, because look, the attention's where the attention should be, right?
Right.
Like everybody wants to know, you know, are we advancing the ball or are we stopping them from advancing it? Mm-hmm. And none of that really falls into the category of what's the fat guy doing up front, you know?
Right.
So, you know, I think, look, within an organization, and I think really where you look at it is you look at it, where's the pay, right? Like, look at the salary for the position, and that'll tell you where the respect is. Now, that's not how it should be, because in the grand scheme of things, you know, obviously everyone has a role to play. It's a total team sport.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely not swimming, and it sure as hell ain't golf.
Right.
So it's a total team sport, and I think if you look at, you know, where the money goes, you know, look, the quarterbacks get paid, your DBs get paid that are good, right, at certain positions, especially the corner position. Your wide receivers will get paid, but your linemen, especially your left tackles and tackles in general, but even your interior guys, you know, they're right there with all the rest of them in a lot of ways. So, you know, look, for the most part, every fat guy that I know that played defensive or offensive line could give zero, about the whole where it's at. I mean, within the organization, look, if the quarterback wants to have a good day, he better have a good line,
right,
and he better acknowledge it, you know? So, and if the quarterback has a good day, guess who else has a good day? The receivers and the running backs and everyone else. So, you know, it truly is a total team atmosphere. And when you get to a certain level, right, like everybody understands what the other guy brings to the table and they demand it, you know,
right.
they want you showing up every day.
Yeah. And so you guys, you win multiple Super Bowls. Okay. And I'm curious what it is like to be around people who have one goal in mind. Because you don't ever hear an NFL player say, I want to win the division. That's my goal. No one ever says that. They say, I want to win the Super Bowl, period. That's the pinnacle of the sport. And so I'm curious what it was like to be around icons and champions and what that mindset was at the beginning of every year and how that maybe changed throughout the entire season.
Yeah. I mean, it starts with your head coach, like it does in any organization, right? I don't care if you're, you know, in the farming industry, you're, you know, building widgets for a living, you've got some customer service base, whatever. I mean, for the most part, it comes down to one person, and then that one person empowering or at least opening the door for everyone else around them, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that it's one person that makes a difference, but there's one person that runs the best of the best,
mm-hmm.
but on their own, they couldn't do anything. So in our case, it starts with a guy like Bill Belichick.
Mm-hmm.
He's a historian. He grew up around the game of football from the day he was born. He made it his life's passion to understand the game from every aspect. He's got a photographic memory. He's been doing it forever. Whether you like him or not, you can't argue, you know, his talent and what he's been able to do. And he's done it at the highest level forever.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're with a guy like that, you know, every single day, you walk in there's a purpose. And we always talked about it kind of on your way in, right? Do your job, work hard, be attentive, put the team first. Those were like some of the core tenets of what made us successful. And then when you leave, you know, ignore the noise, don't fuel the hype, manage expectations and speak for yourself. You know, so whether you were in the facility or not, you carried that brand. You represented, you know, that team. And you thought about your job at all times.
Right.
And anything else that came at you, as Bill used to always say, during that period of time between basically July and hopefully February, you put in a desk drawer, and when we're past February, go ahead and deal with all that stuff you want. So it is a singular focus.
Yep.
And, you know, the way he manages that is pretty unique. And the way that he evaluates, I mean, look, we evaluate on a literally on an hourly basis. So, we know exactly what's expected of us on a Monday when we come in after a Sunday game.
Mm-hmm.
We know what Tuesday is going to be. Yeah. We know exactly how Wednesday we're going to approach it. Not necessarily the minutiae, not the little details, but we know what is expected. And we also know that we're going to be evaluated after every single thing we do. They're going to film the walkthrough. They're going to film the practice. We're going to be going over, you know, film forever, every single day. It was like the worst thing for me. But anyway, constant evaluation, constant feedback, and very high expectations.
Gotcha. What was it like? I mean, what was the most difficult part about playing in the NFL? How many seasons did you play?
I played for 11 seasons, all in New England, and six of those seasons we went all the way to the AFC Championship game or the Super Bowl.
Yep.
I played in five Super Bowls, so, you know, for over half of my career, we went as deep into the season as you could possibly go.
Yeah.
And, you know, very fortunate. Played with some of the greatest players in the history of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Junior Seau's and the Kevin Faulks and, you know, the Logan Mankins and the Tom Brady's and, you know, the Randy Mosses and the Teddy Bruschi. I mean, I can go on for days. Yeah. The Mike Vrabel. I mean, all these guys that were legends, you know. We had a lot of fun together, even in a very demanding system. And, you know, we worked really hard for what we got.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. It's really cool. But while you're doing that, because I've had a couple NFL players on the show, and one of the guys was just like, man, I absolutely loved the outdoors, but I had to sacrifice that basically to, you know, make supper while the stove is on, you know what I mean? And so were you able to mix in at least a little bit of the outdoors over those 11 seasons?
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, again, most of it, you know, some predator hunting right when the season ended, you know, maybe a trip to Texas for, you know, a late season whitetail, depending on kind of where we were in the playoff run.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being able to go home after playing in a Thanksgiving game in Detroit, you know, rode home with my parents, got to go hunt my farm, and that was a great experience. But, you know, most of it was in the spring.
Yeah.
Lot of turkey hunting, man. I mean, you know, to this day, I mean, I probably go anywhere from 38 to 40 days straight. Ooh. Don't miss a morning. And it's about as much fun as you can have on the planet.
That's funny. An NFL player leaving the stadium with their parents to ride home. Like, that's what I did when I was in eighth grade. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. So,
that's awesome. Okay. 11 years. Can't, you know, the outdoors means something to you. You come from the outdoors. It's in your blood. You play 11 years. Now it's time to quit football. It's time to retire. Talk to me about that transition from professional sports to back to reality.
You know, I don't think that I necessarily had a plan. I like to say to people all the time that, you know, for me, you know, you can say it's my faith. You can say it's, you know, just maybe a naive belief in things working out for the best. I've never had to really make a tough decision in my life. I follow the lead of many others. I try to make sure that, you know, I never have to look over my shoulder. I try to serve other people, not just through the foundation and the work we do, but, you know, just in general. Just try to be a good human, and I feel like, you know, when that's my mindset or that's my focus, I really don't have to make hard decisions. So, you know, look, I also didn't think that I got to New England, and I'm looking around, and I'm like, they clearly made a big mistake, right? Like, it's something that you're going to figure out that I have no the right to be in this room with these guys. And, you know, then 11 years later, you know, I'm like, wow, this is kind of wild. So, never expected to go that long, never expected to hold up that long, I guess, whatever. I was just along for the ride. And towards the end of my career, you know, look, I had a year left on my contract when I retired. I walked away from that and the game because it just wasn't as fun,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, not to be the guy that went uphill both ways with no shoes in the pouring rain and snow, but the caliber of individual coming from the college ranks to the league wasn't my cup of tea, man. I've never been on social media. I never will.
Yeah.
I've never even logged on to a platform. And I grew up in the heyday of MySpace or Facebook, whatever the hell it is, right? I didn't do any of it. Right. And I never will. And look, we do it for the foundation. I do it for my businesses. I don't do it, but other people do. I know how valuable it can be in the right hands. It's just not me.
Right.
And so, you know, I think when I look at why I left the game, it really was that connection to the people that I was with. I mean, I've walked through the locker room and slapped phones out of guys' hands and introduced them to the guy that's in the locker next to him that has one number higher or maybe one number lower. You know, like, hey, you may want to look over there and say hello to this dude. And, you know, I also loved organizing things for the guys to do off the field, you know, Halloween parties and, you know, get-togethers and you know, messing around racing go-karts or whatever. Like, that's where I found my niche, man. That's what I enjoyed. And so when it became more about their social media presence and selling T-shirts and making money off the field and all that stuff, man, it just didn't appeal to me anymore. So, and I was able to walk away on my terms. And it wasn't as if, again, I didn't have the master plan. But look, I'm passionate about a lot of things, man. I take down old barns. I reclaim old barns. Done well over 100 of those. And I like preserving the past. I've got a million other interests and other companies that I've launched. And, you know, there was no shortage of things that I could be doing. And, oh, by the way, I'll be able to hunt all fall. Sign me up. I'm good.
Absolutely. Amen. And you know, you're still young enough to go out and do some of these hunts. I don't know what kind of shape your knees are in. If your knees are anything like me, they give you some troubles now and then. But you know, I'm 43 right now, and there's days where I go, oh, I'm so old. But then I'll look at what old really is, and it kind of fires me up. And I'm like, I can do that. I can go do that hunt, no problem.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, you know, look, I've had 15 major surgeries, you know, the kind that you go to sleep and you wake up in pain. And luckily, I'm repairable. So I've been able to bounce back and, you know, I got my aches and pains, but I don't honestly focus on it too much. I mean, it is what it is kind of a thing. And I'm blessed to be able to, you know, do pretty much what I want to do and live the life I live. And you know, I look back on my time playing and really appreciate it, man. I learned a lot about the game of football, you know, served as an executive committee member, you know, for the NFLPA because I wanted to know where my money was going and, you know, got to learn a lot, you know, about a lot of different things. And, you know, look, we got the 2011 CBA signed after a lockout period. So I love business too. So I got to see behind the scenes, the business side of the game. I got to see the people side of the game, the coaching side of the game. And there are parts of me that are disappointed in where the game's gone, right? Like, look, if you're an NFL fan, I don't know how you could deny the fact that the game today is far less – it's far less – they execute at far less a level than what we did a very short few years ago, right? So – I've been out of the game for over a decade now, and I can tell you the game is not better. They don't execute better now than we did. That's a fact.
Yeah.
And they don't allow them to hit at all anymore. I mean, if there's a good hit, it's almost a guarantee it's a 15-yarder.
Yeah.
You know, they've changed the game. They've changed the rules of the game. They've changed how you can prepare yourself as a player – They've changed how you can prepare your players as a coach. I mean, these guys don't practice anymore.
Yeah.
And at all. Like, literally, they don't put pads on hardly at all. And people wonder why there's more injury today than there was a decade ago.
Yeah.
Well, it's pretty basic knowledge that if you don't practice yourself into playing condition, you're going to break. So all that was done for the idea of player safety, health, and wellness, the reality is it had nothing to do with that. It was all about getting a 17th game. They got their 17th game, and they also have the biggest cash cow in the history of NFL, and that's sports betting.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, they can do things like kneel and disrespect the military and make all these problems out of thin air and still make more money, even though they have less viewers, even though, you know, the game's not, you know, as productive as it used to be. And at some point, that's going to backfire on them. And I would encourage them to sit down, and as them, I'm talking the owners, and figure out a better way, because the fans have no say in what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right? It's now left to the big money. But right. When they leave, they're gone.
Yeah.
And when they're gone, the game of football is in dire straits. It's over. And the young men that are playing the game today that need that structure in their lives won't have another outlet.
Yeah.
So for their sake, I hope that they can get back. And that's just me preaching as a guy that's been there and done it.
Yep.
But I think it's indicative of what you see in our society, right? Everybody wants it now. I mean, they got the NIL, you know, deals in college football. That's a shame. They have the transfer portal at the college level. That's a damn shame. Accountability, hard work, perseverance, that's out the window.
Mm-hmm.
It's just give it to me now. And they're promoting that with everything that they do. And at some point, that will come back and bite them. And unfortunately, when it does, all those kids, those young men that need the game of football won't have it.
Right. Yeah. That's nuts, man. So as you get out of the NFL, right, I hear the word philanthropist thrown around a lot. And whenever I thought about that word, I just feel like that was – something that an actor said that they did to sound like they're doing more than just acting. Okay. And so what is a philanthropist in your eyes, and why did, you know, when Troy reached out to me, why did he call you a philanthropist?
I don't know. I think he likes to just try to use multi-syllable words to make him look smarter than he is. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I don't use the word. I can tell you that when I see that word, I just picture some, you know, older white male that had made billions sitting around in a castle and throwing cash towards people. I don't know. Look, I think the essence of it is pretty simple, right?
Right.
There's a focus on something more than just yourself.
Yes.
And to me, again, that's what I was surrounded by. I was surrounded by people that were selfless. They were sacrificial with their time, with their resources. And to sacrifice, you know, anything, it means that it comes with a little bit of pain, right? I mean, as much as we like, you know, and as if I say we, I just mean in the realm of giving back and giving of your time and sacrificing, you're – by very essence of what you're doing, you're giving up one thing for another.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is pain in that, right? But you gladly do it because you understand the value of doing something real. And look, when we launched the Light Foundation, it was born out of this idea that, like I said earlier, at some point they're going to figure out they made a big mistake and all this money they're paying me is going to go away. But while I have it, what am I doing with it? Or as my grandmother always reminded me, to whom much is given, much is required, right? So you've been given all this, now what?
Yeah.
And for me, it was easy. I come from a long line of educators. My mom taught music for 35 years. She's a saint. She's unbelievable. She gives of everything in every way, like just to help people. My father's, you know, very much the same way, and just a genius mind. I went to them and said, hey, look, let's do something. You know, we won a Super Bowl my rookie year. I got people paying me to go sign autographs. Like, well, let's turn this into something. And from that was born, you know, the Light Foundation and our mission. And it took us years to get there. But look, we're 22 years in now.
Yeah.
And we know what we're here to do. We've got unbelievable people who support us and give us the ability to do what we do. And I think it's also something, our mission of working with young people, walking alongside of them, holding them accountable, you know, opening their eyes to what it means to do real things. Mm-hmm. And we use the word real all the time, responsible, ethical, accountable. And at the end of the day, lead, mm-hmm. be a leader. And it, like, not, you don't have to run a company. You don't have to be, you know, some guy that gives speeches. You know, we lead every single day in some form or fashion. So we get to do that. We get supported by people who want us to do that. And, oh, by the way, it's probably more important today than in the last maybe even 100 years. I mean, we have so many lost people,
right,
that have never been challenged, never been held accountable. And the only way they're going to get there is if someone takes the time to do it with them.
Right.
But not give them stuff, right? I love that distinction, because we don't give a kid anything. They have to work towards it, but we encourage them to do so, and we encourage them to keep trying. And, you know, we've got all these different programs. Some of them are 4 years long,
yeah,
right? We dedicate 4 years of our lives to impact their life, and we ask a lot out of them. But in return, you know, we think that they're going to be pretty excited about what they can take with them.
Yeah. When you guys were brainstorming this idea, and it sounds to me like this isn't something that took place after you retired. This was something that you had been thinking of ever since you got into the league.
Yeah. I mean, listen up. I was in camps with kids all summer from the majority of my playing career, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this, it started less than a year into my NFL career. And then, of course, we grew what we did. But, you know, look, I'd go straight from 2 weeks in the woods with kids in Ohio right into training camp.
Yeah.
Having not run a conditioning test or really touched the weight, you know, like an idiot. And, you know, that was just my life. And by the way, it's my whole family. It's my in-laws. It's all my wife's family. I mean, everybody sacrifices their summer to serve these young people. And by the way, not that much of a sacrifice. It's a way of life.
Exactly.
And it's awesome. We love it. My kids are all involved. My wife. I mean, you know, it's honestly, I don't remember much on the field, but I can tell you everything that we do through the foundation.
Yeah. What's the foundation's mission?
So I struggle with the mission thing. You know, look, at the end of the day, I love to boil it down by literally just saying, you know, walk alongside young people and hold them accountable and just listen,
yeah,
right? Those are real simple. Now, we talk a lot about, you know, getting kids out of their everyday environment from a mission statement standpoint, introducing them to the outdoors, and through the outdoors, impacting the lives of these kids that would otherwise not probably have an opportunity like what we provide, right? With great mentors and blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
But the other way is much easier. And we do it in creative ways, right? Like, we have a cultural leadership camp. That's the 4-year program I mentioned. That's Camp Vahoakis. It's phenomenal, man. We do career educational tours within that camp. It's over a 4-year period. We take quarterly, we bring kids from all over the country. From, like, right now, we got kids from the Passamaquoddy tribe in Maine. We have kids from Ohio. I mean, we bring in kids from all over. We've had kids from Montana, from Washington, D.C., from Tennessee. We're bringing in a class from Florida. And they all realize that, hey, no matter where you're from, we all kind of deal with the same stuff, mm-hmm, right? And it's an amazing camp. It's our goat of camps, you know. It's what we started with. But then, you know, we've got camps like our first graders, you know, where we call it the Light Project, where we get them really excited about reading real books, right? And that's an amazing thing to see happen. And they get to come out to our camp and utilize our trails and do all kind of neat kind of science outdoor-based experiments. And then we've got our timber framing camp. And timber framing, what's that have to do with leadership? Well, a lot, because we base it all around those concepts of accountability, showing up on time, working with new people, making presentations, but they get to use their hands and work with, you know, slicks and chisels and beam boring machines and saws and create unbelievable masterpieces. And look, all this information is on our website, but unique programs with young people and just introducing them to great mentors that have a passion for what they do and they get to learn from them.
Right.
And so, you know, one of the things that'll be really relatable for your audience is we do these two youth hunts for wild turkey. It'll be, I think, 15 or 17 years in Ohio. We're working on, I don't know, year four or five here in Rhode Island, and they run back-to-back weekends. Man, it's a blast.
Yeah.
I get to bring kids into the outdoors. I get to introduce them to the very people who taught me how to turkey hunt. And man, it so many great memories, so many great moments.
Yeah.
And those kids, they learn a lot. And it's not all, again, it's a turkey hunt, but it's a leadership program. It all falls under the Light Foundation Leadership Academy. And again, they got to put some work in. Even our youth hunts, man, they got to volunteer for, you know, to do habitat restoration projects on our farm or other farms. They have to write an essay. They have to turn in their application on time. You know, so a lot of accountability in everything we do.
Who are these kids? Are these kids chosen, or do they choose to be a part of this?
It depends on the program. So when it comes to Camp Vahokus, our leadership, our cultural leadership camp, that four-year program, we actively go out and seek these kids, and we have a list of criteria. Here's what we're looking for, right? But then in the event of like a youth hunt or a timber framing camp or the Light Project, it's just an open enrollment. Hey, look, you submit an application. We grade the essays. We grade the application. And then the top 10, top 20, top 30, whatever it is, get to come in and take part in it. So, and by the way, I like competition, right? Like if it's free, does it mean as much? No, it never does.
Right.
When you have to work for it, do you remember it better? Do you pay a little bit more attention? Do you plan, you know, how you're going to engage? Yeah, a lot more. So we like competition.
Yeah. So then is there a fee for these kids, or does the foundation pay for it all?
Nope. It doesn't matter if it's travel expenses, if it's what we're doing, everything we take care of. And again, we've got unbelievable supporters, you know, that make that all possible.
Awesome. Awesome. I got a funny story. I can remember I went to go visit my buddy. I was in a college about an hour and a half north of him here in Iowa. And his roommate, I think it was like his junior or his sophomore year, was a lacrosse player from New York City that went to Iowa State. And we got in my Jeep or my Blazer, and I took him out on a gravel road for the very first time of his life. And I showed him a cow, and because he'd never seen a cow like where you could smell it and you could hear it and all that stuff. And so it was like a real awakening for him as far as, holy cow, like I was driving 50 on a gravel road, normal, and he was scared out of his mind. You could look at him. He was like, hey, are we going to wreck here? You know? So, what I'm trying to get to on that story is that what kind of reaction do some of these kids have to the outdoors who have never been in the outdoors before?
Well, immediately, I can remember a young man named Isaac, and he no sooner set down his bags in front of one of our yurts and he walked over to me and he said, now, you know, look, When you get to our part of Ohio, when you get to where our camp's located, you know, you could try to walk somewhere to find a ride to go and maybe hit a city to find a bus to get to a plane, but you may die before you reach that point. Right? So there's a hefty realization that happens without being told for some of these young men and some of these kids that we're not in Kansas anymore.
Right.
And for this young man in particular, I remember seeing that, you know, he looked like he was a little lost, and I introduced myself, and it was day one of this 4-year program, and he's a rookie, he's a freshman, and are going into his freshman year in high school, summer before, and he puts his bag down and he walks over, and I remember he said to me, "I think I best just go home." And I said, "Well, Isaac, here's the deal." Now this is a great story, man. I said, "Here's the deal. You were on the last flight coming in, and it'd take us hours to get you to the airport, and then you'd have to sit there overnight to wait for the next flight the next day, if there was one that had room. So how about we get settled in here tonight? And hey, maybe before you take off tomorrow, we find something you've always wanted to do. Like, when you looked at this camp and you agreed to do this and you committed to it and you signed the pledge, what was one of the things you were looking forward to?" And he's like, "Man, you know, me and my grandfather fish all the time." This young man was from Tennessee. He said, "We fish all the time, and I've never caught a crappie." And I was like, "You've never caught a crappie?" I'm like, "Well, man, dude, one of the places we're going to fish at is a good buddy of mine's pond." I said, "Dude, we got slabs in there, man." I go, "You'll catch a crappie and you can possibly imagine." And he, you know, I saw him take a little bit more interest. Well, later that night, he said, "You think we can go over there and fish that?" I said, "Man, we can, but we won't be able to hit that till tomorrow evening, and they're not going to bite well in the morning if we try to get there anyway." "Okay, so you can hang on till then?" Okay, all right. So, you know, it's amazing the reaction that we get from kids, but Isaac survived, man. Yeah. Isaac made it that year. He didn't go home, and I think it's this too. You're never, ever going to see a person. And in this case, I would say, imagine that person in New York, like this lacrosse player, and they're in one of their little cubby holes of a building, of a skyscraper, of a whatever, and they walk outside, and they take a deep breath of fresh air, which isn't fresh in the city, but, you know, go with me on this one, and they go, "Oh, that sucks."
Yeah,
I mean, you're never going to hear that. That doesn't happen. It's not possible, right?
Right.
Like, there is a draw for us as human beings to be in the outdoors, whether we want to acknowledge it, agree with it, or not. It's part of who we are. And this way that we live now is very foreign in the entire history of mankind. So it doesn't take long, especially for young people, to realize the power of being outdoors. Mm-hmm. And then as a hook, right? Like, hey, if you want to do that, then you have to do this. Mm-hmm. Well, that is pretty cool. And that could be riding a dirt bike on a flat track for the first time ever. That could be shooting your first 22. That could be hitting a sporting clay for the very first time. And whether they've been around or not, whether they had a little trepidation or not looking at it, in every instance, these kids try it, and in almost every instant, they love it.
Yeah.
So, and with all those things comes a ton of responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. I can't give you this weapon, this bow, this firearm, unless you do all of these things right every single time.
Yeah.
Got it? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you're sitting right over there. And there's been a lot of people sitting over there, but they don't last there very long. They always want to get over here where the action's taking place.
What kind of changes have you seen kids go through for the better who attend these camps and do these activities that your foundation offers?
Yeah, man, it's endless, man. I mean, I tell you, we see young people that, you know, go from not having a plan to, you know, being pretty rock solid in where they want to go. We find young people that have no idea who their identity is lost in things that don't really make any sense or don't have any real value to understanding who they are and kind of where they fit in, right? We see the confidence go through the roof. You know, I was blown away when one of our campers, one of our graduates, you know, many years ago came up and he acknowledged, you know, one of the things that really brought me out of my shell that gave me a lot of confidence was playing paintball. And we play paintball every year. I like it because I get to put a bullseye on the kid that's driving me nuts. Don't tell them. But think about that for a second, right? Like, I take it for granted. Mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up, you know, heck, it wasn't paintball when I was a kid. It was a BB gun and only three pumps. But I knew that my friends were going five, so I definitely went five or six when I could. That said, not very smart. You know, who would have thought that that would be something you'd hear, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I never thought that. But, yeah, man, we see a lot of amazing, you know, progress. And look, we don't win them all.
Yeah.
We don't.
Yeah.
But it's not about that. I'm not keeping score on did we win every, you know, every case.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make sure that, you know, they know what's expected and things are modeled for them, right? Like, if I'm not willing to be there and put in all the work that I'm asking them to, then why should they?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I showed it to you. Now my expectation is you will,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think that that's the job of a parent. But, you know, what we all know is not every parent has the time or the ability or in some cases cares enough to do it. And that's where the greater community comes in. And yeah. So we're lucky to be able to make that kind of an impact.
What kind of reward do you get from doing all of this?
I don't know, man. I've never really taken inventory. I mean, it's just kind of who I am, I guess. And who the people I surround myself with are. And I think there's just, it's just great knowing that, you know, I've got these relationships with these young people that help keep me young and allow me to be, you know, a kid at heart, you know, whenever I want to be, you know? And so, you know, I love watching people succeed, man. I mean, I can't watch any of these talent shows without getting teary-eyed when somebody does something, you know, or realizes that they're capable of doing something for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, I love watching people succeed, and that's all I really need to get out of it.
Amen. Amen. Well, we're nearing the end here, and so I got to ask you about this Turkey Touchdown 2024. What's that all about?
Well, it starts out with our largest fundraising event, which is our celebrity shootout. This will be our 20th year here in 2024. And about a decade ago, we sold a hunt to go down to Florida and hunt the famous Gilchrist Club. Now, the Gilchrist Club is as fine a sporting club as I've ever been to.
Mm-hmm.
The food, the accommodations, just the land and how they manage it. Now, it's a big quail place, but they've got a ton of turkey. They got gators. They got deer. And we had a gentleman who's been a big supporter of the foundation, Paul Hare, and he said, hey, look, I'm a member. It's a members-only place. I'm a member, and I'll give you a hunt. But I want you to come down and you help guide and we'll let you raise some money at your shootout event. Okay. So we sold this hunt. And a friend of mine that introduced me to Paul, who's also a board member, Mr. Jamie Marshall, he had never hunted a day in his life. And I said, hey, man, you help make this possible. So when we go down there, you got to go with me. So the event was in September. In March, we all head to Florida. The people that bought it, it raised probably $25,000. We all go down there, and Mr. Jamie Marshall ends up shooting his first turkey, his first animal of his life. And not only is he proud, but he shot a world record albino Osceola. And they called it the Ghost of Gilchrist, right? So the Ghost of Gilchrist was this massive albino Osceola, and he has the thing mounted, first thing he's ever had mounted. And from that March until the following September, where we're going to be having the same event again, auctioning the same hunt,
mm-hmm.
he was wearing me out, man. I'm talking about how all the years that I've hunted, I've never had a world record, you know, telling everybody that I know, that we know together about, you know, what he did and what he accomplished. He was featured on the cover of Florida Game and Fish magazine, holding up his bird. I mean, it was just one of those things that I had to endure, right? Mm-hmm. Well, we get him up on stage the following September, and he's on stage. And the reason we titled this if you go to turkeytouchdown.com, you can watch this documentary.
Okay.
But we titled it The Tom Brady of Turkey Hunting, because when I handed him the mic to talk about what he did in front of 500 people, he literally said, "You're looking at the world record holder. I killed the Moby Dick of turkey. I'm the Tom Brady of turkey hunting." And he brought the house down. But I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Until that moment, up on stage in front of 500 people a year after we sold this hunt, until that moment, he was not aware of the fact that what he shot was a 44-pound broad-breasted white turkey that I bought at a local farm. And listen, for all of you that love hunting, you also love a good practical joke, and I can guarantee one thing. You've never seen something as real as what you're going to see, because Jamie didn't know anything about hunting. He had never hunted a day in his life. And when he shot that bird and they weighed it, he immediately looked it up and he was like, "It's a world record." I'm like, "I bet it is. I've never seen a bird that big in my life." And he has it mounted. My brother called him as the head of Florida Game and Fish. And I created an entire cover and wrote the article in the magazine. And we produced an entire magazine. I printed off 200 copies. So at the event the next year where he gets up on stage, before he got up on stage, he was signing the magazine for people, because I had my friend, I had a polo shirt made, and I put Florida Game and Fish on it. And we told, and the guy, my buddy went up and introduced himself. He goes, "Hey, I'm here with Florida Game and Fish. We're doing this article on this story of what you did on this world record. You know, would you mind if we followed you around?" So they're following him around, and they said, "Hey, we brought 200 copies, advanced copies of the magazine for you and to do what you want with." So he was signing them for people. And so on stage in front of 500 people, we show the video, because I literally videoed this whole thing. I was in a ghillie suit in a palmetto when he shot the bird. I was only like maybe 30 yards from him, but he had no idea. And so we put this whole documentary together. We got Willie Robertson and Mark Drury and Ernie Calandrelli and Mikey Miller, the turkey killer, and Doc Chamberlain, and all these people that are in the hunting realm talking about this epic hunt and what
he
did.
Holy cow.
Now listen, here's the most important thing I can tell you. The reason we did it, yes, to laugh, because it's fun to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, Jamie Marshall is a saint. He's one of our board members, and he had a great attitude about this thing from day one, because it is funny. But the real reason we launched this is because we want to talk about what we're doing with the foundation and how people can help us do what we do. So what we're doing is we're actually giving people an opportunity to win an all-expense-paid trip to go down to outside of Gainesville to the Gilchrist Club and hunt with us later this month. So the drawing is going to be on March 15th. TurkeyTouchdown.com. For $10 or spend $100, get as many chances as you want, you can win a hunt of a lifetime, because it's that much fun.
Right.
So encourage everybody, check out the video. I hope you laugh like hell, and then send it to somebody you know, or just go buy a whole bunch of them. And if you win, even if you can't go, gift it to somebody that you know would have a time of their life. And we're going to have fun hunting down in Florida very soon.
Wow. First off, kudos for making a practical joke last that long, because sometimes it's just like a one-day deal. Like, this was what, months?
Oh, I mean, from inception, it was over a year. You know, my favorite moment was that we were at the Greenbrier Resort in West Virginia, and Jamie and I were, and it was a big convention. And when we went to fly out, there's a little tiny Greenbrier airport, right? And there's like one person that works there, and they do the job of everything, right? Mm-hmm. So Jamie's a salesman, and he's hilarious. And he asked this guy when we check in, it's just the two of us. He goes, man, we're kind of in the middle of nowhere out here. And the guy's like, yeah. And again, Jamie's not an outdoorsman. And so he's like, you guys do a lot of hunting, huh? He goes, yep. Yeah. And I'm like, uh-oh. You know, because I'm deathly afraid of this thing, the cat getting out of the bag, mm-hmm. right? And I know where this is going. Mm-hmm. And so he says, you guys got a lot of turkey around here? And he goes, yes, sir, man. We got turkey all over, son. And Jamie goes, you ever seen a turkey like this? And he hands him his phone. And as the guy's looking at it, I see his face. And I'm like, oh, God. Oh, God. And Jamie goes, that's a 44-pound albino Osceola. That's a state record. And I kid you not, this dude looked up from the phone and goes, well, hell, son, we got about 60,000 of them in a barn just down the road. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I'm behind him going, No. And Jamie, I mean, clearly he didn't even understand what that meant. He thought right. that was like some hillbilly speak for, I don't know, there's a lot of birds. And so the guy's like looking at me and he's like, you know, just doesn't say anything more. And he puts Jamie through the, you know, little luggage car wash and the security and comes back to deal with me. And he's looking at me and I said, hey, man, I said, you and I are just talking right now. I don't make any facial expression. Don't go crazy. I said, but I'm going to let you in on a little secret. And he goes, yeah, what's that? And I said, well, that guy that just went through here and that story he just told you, he thinks that's real. But I bought and I told him what happened. Mm-hmm. And that dude fell to his knees behind the counter and was weeping because he saw how legit that was for Jamie. So listen, I don't do these things to be cruel. He's a dear friend of mine and has done so much. I wouldn't do that to somebody that I didn't love. Wow. I love this guy, and he is a saint. But that was one of the funnier things I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, my Lord. I cannot imagine there being a more in-depth, practical joke than this story right here. That's bananas.
Well, I can introduce you to four others that I've done that would definitely blow that out of the water. But let's not get into that.
Right, right.
It was unbelievably awesome, and it played out to perfection.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I tell you what, Matt, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on here and chit-chat about the Light Foundation. Is there anything else that we need to know about the Light Foundation, where we should send people if they're interested in finding more information about it or anything like that?
Well, listen, man, I appreciate it. It's been great getting to talk to you and have a voice with your audience. And so, yeah, look, mattlight72.com. It sounds so self-serving, but if you go to Light Foundation, it's some makeup thing for women. Anyway, mattlight72.com. And you can learn a lot about the programs, the kids we work with, the work we do, our events. Our events are fun, man. I mean, we do a corporate training day. It's unbelievable. I bring in some of the greatest warriors in our nation's history. You know, guys like Kyle Lamb and Kevin Holland and Chili Palmer and J.R. Cook. I mean, all these unbelievable, unbelievable special operators that have given so much, and they give in areas that are like their expertise to all of our participants. So we have corporate training day. Our celebrity shootout is an absolute blast. So you can find out who we are, what we do, ways that you can support us, but definitely go to turkeytouchdown.com, and hopefully I'll be with you down in Florida as our grand prize winner.
There you go. Well, Matt, I really appreciate you. Thank you very much for hopping on, and have a good turkey season.
Hey, you too, brother. Appreciate it.